readings today again cause us to confront the fact that these texts are ancient. They come from a thought world, a culture that's radically alien to ours. For instance, this thing from Isaiah, the word of God coming down and doing things. Well, this is what anthropologists call word magic, whereas we're in the word and the reality expressed by the word, we're one of the same things. So the word was almost a physical reality. And that's why the word could come down and do stuff. And this passage from Matthew also bears traces of the fact that it was written two or three generations after Jesus. And this explanation of the parable, namely the fate of the seed, was clearly added by Matthew, because it was describing a situation long after Jesus told this parable about the seed, which is fine. It is helpful to know, you know, to get some kind of grip on these texts. But I want to talk about this passage from the letter to the Romans. The letter to the Romans is unique in the Pauline corpus in that it's the only letter that was not written under the gun, so to speak. The letters to the Corinthians were written because the Corinthians were goofy and were messed up religiously in many ways, so that they thought the people who could speak in tongues were superior to the people who could not speak in tongues, which gave rise to that great hymn to love. Even if I speak in the tongues of men and angels that do not have love. So Paul's making the point there, the letter to the Thessalonians, where the people are all panicked because Jesus died, they believed God raised him from the dead, and a whole bunch of other people had died, and Jesus had not come back to end the world, and so Paul just said, cool, just relax. God's in charge, yeah. So you don't have to worry about anything. The letter to the Romans is unique, though, because it's probably the last of the letters that Paul wrote. It's certainly the longest, and it's the most expansive. It's Paul reflecting near what happened to be the end of his life, if he was killed, on the whole meaning of the Jesus event. It is it's not written under the pressure of immediate circumstances, but Paul is trying to get his head around this whole cosmic phenomenon of the significance of Jesus. And that's what he's talking about here. Jesus does have a cosmic phenomenon impinging on the entire world, on all of reality. Well, it's interesting. I wish Thomas Berry, well, he died last year, or some of the other cosmologists were around to comment on this, because what Paul is doing is something that sounds very much like Teilhardian thought or modern cosmological thought, where he wants to talk about the whole course of all of physical reality. And he wants to say that we human beings have distorted it in major ways. He says he subjected the world, the cosmos, to futility. What does that mean? Is that we use the world of nature for the purposes of our own greed, our own acquisitiveness? We have actually thwarted what God intended in giving the earth to us human beings. So it is a marvelous testimony to the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, who really did trust us human beings. You know? However untrustworthy we were, God continued to trust us, to entrust the world to us, to believe that we would be responsible caretakers of the world that we inhabit. He would use it not just for our own selfish ends, but for the good of everybody. That the world is there for us to cultivate, to be, and that wonderful phrase that the Protestants love so much, to be stewards of creation. To be stewards of creation. That's a great phrase. Caretakers. And so it is this is not far-fetched. It's a real anticipation of a lot of the ecological theology that's been produced today by people like Berry or Rosemary Luther. Because, let's face it, folks, the world is going to hell in a handbasket. 70 species a day of plants and animals disappear under our lack of stewardship. We've despoiled the earth. We continue to despoil the earth in the name of progress, which is simply code word for greed and acquisitiveness and violence. So this beautiful image of creation awaits with eager longing for the revealing of the children of God. That is, those who really will be responsible for the world. Those who really will receive the world as gift, not as something to which we are entitled. And therefore, as gift, it must be cherished and be thanked for. And be treated well, not just for our own benefit, but for the benefit of everybody. It's a remarkable vision. It's wonderful. We need to hear it badly today.